I mean, like, you know, when you're serving him all the time, it, you can't quite, it's not the lover-beloved in, on the surface of the relationship, but did Baba have that with any, where that seemed to be the character, with the musts or something?
Yeah.
Mera?
That is most glaring. I know nothing about Mera, but at least I am a witness to his sessions with the musts, and also with letters. Yeah.
Did it seem to be that with the musts? Lover beloved?
Yeah. More so.
Was he happy after being with the musts?
Very happy. To say happy is not a proper word. What should I say? It's happiness.
Very satisfied?
That is satisfying, that stems contentment.
Karish, in that case, though, didn't Baba almost acted more like the lover and the must was the beloved because he was serving? And
the must considered him to be the beloved. That is the joke, you see. And he the beloved, and they, the lovers, they expected him to be that. Or they are anticipating him all the time, loving him with that anticipation that one day the beloved would come. And he does come, but he hides himself behind the screen of being the lover and they being the beloved. That was fun to watch.
Can you recount any specific memories of that?
Huh?
Can you recount any specific memories?
Yeah, quite a few are there. They are there, all depicted in the book. Read page 325, paragraph 4.
Oh, I read the book, but I have a feeling that Dr. Duncan was overworked and couldn't write down every detail, so there might be a couple that you remember that he missed.
It is there, but we have got this chore first. Later on, we'll deal with that too, after we establish the relationship. I want you to hear this little relationship that goes on. Will you please put it somewhere here so that we can all hear? Because I am the person who is most keen to hear it.
Tonight, Rick Chapman is going to speak on relationships. For anybody who doesn't know, Rick met Baba not quite 20 years, 17 years ago, and has been very active in spreading Baba's message through my Baba information. Has written a book of How to Choose a Guru, edited some other books. And tonight, I feel honored to welcome Rick to us to speak on relationships.
Thanks, man.
Sorry about
that.
I have some thoughts that I wanted to share, and then they escaped me. So all these notes are just an illusion here. I've really tried to capture something that has been a fascination of mine for the last year or so. And I realized that throwing out the title of a talk, Relationships, is a little bit dangerous. First of all, I really didn't expect anyone to come because I figured that it wouldn't be relevant to anybody. But then again, what else to do on a Friday night? I'd like to back up to a point that many of you in the Bay Area have heard, and let me just repeat a portion of my meeting with Baba, which is a perfect springboard into the subject of relationships, as I see the subject tonight. When I had a very brief meeting with Baba in 1966 in August, he capsulized the spiritual path in very, very few words. And I always have felt that if all the libraries were to burn, if there were no more spiritual literature left on earth, if I knew nothing else, everything would be sufficient in the few words that Baba said about the spiritual path and about how strives to find him. I had, in the very early minutes of meeting Bala, said, in response to his question, how did you sleep last night? So I slept well, Bala, but my mind, I've been very excited, obviously. He said, why? And I said that this chance to see you now, for those of you who are new to Bala or don't know about that time period, Bala was in seclusion through most of the 60s, and certainly in this period in 1966 in strict seclusion, and his lovers and followers and anyone who was curious to meet him couldn't go to meet him, couldn't go to see him, couldn't write and introduce yourself, because Bala was in such strict seclusion that he literally wasn't available to old followers or new. And it was a stroke of enormous good fortune that while I was in India, I did have a brief chance, as occasionally said, Bala would lift the curtain for just a few minutes, and I did have a few minutes with Bala. And when I said, well, I've been very excited, he said, why? I said, this chance to see you, if you knew how many hugs I'm carrying, how many embraces from your lovers, Eastern and Western, I'd be here for a month just trying to deliver them. Bala immediately said, fine, it's natural you're excited, but pay no attention to the thoughts of the mind, the nature of the mind, to have every kind of thought, good and bad. You must long for me with your heart. And then he said, in fact, pay no attention whatsoever to the spiritual path. A statement which was a little shocking in the context of my understanding that he had written the most exhaustive statements and discourses about the spiritual path that I'd ever come across. So pay no attention to the spiritual path, or to the planes of consciousness, or to any spiritual experiences, because they're nothing but toys for children, because they're nothing but illusion. You must strive to see me as I really am. He said, by this time I felt like I had, every phrase was landing like a mortar shell, just with such significance and such a sense of saying it all, that I was really stunned and feeling an enormous sense of the preciousness of what Bala was communicating. Then he looked at me with a slightly puzzled look and said, but how will you see me as I really am? And before I could open my mouth and make a great mistake by trying to answer that question, he answered it and he said, by longing for me with your heart. And then he said, but where will you get this longing? And again, for the second time, he looked as if the second greatest question in the universe had just occurred. The first one, how will you ever see me as I really am? Then he answered that question and resolved the tension of this enormous question, and then it followed with another one. But how will you get this longing? And he then again responded by saying, by loving me. Twice more in the meeting, he said, you must strive to see me as I really am. And that later became the theme of my writing of the account of meeting Bala, because it seemed so clearly to be the theme of his remarks to me. And 17 years later, as Ben says, after that day in 1966, I still ponder how to strive to see him as he really is, how to see him as he really, really is. Because I came to Bala through a long search, through many avenues of mysticism, disenchanted with many religious and mystical paths that have some striving and some seeking, but don't seem to deliver or even promise the delivery of our real self as it really is. And Bala made that promise with a potency that puke in doubt. When you hear that promise, when you come across it, you know that he can deliver it. So, in the course of life, thinking about Baba's injunction, it occurred to me that relationships are a central part of the lives we lead. They may well be the part of the lives we lead, the only part there is. From the beginning, if there's a beginning, from the gas state to the saint state, relationships are there. And they're most acutely felt in our state, the human state, in which it seems that everything boils down to relationships. Family relationships, relationships at work, at business, relationships with your husband, your wife, your kids. Outside the circle of your friends, relationships with the guy who comes to repair the stove, relationships with the salespeople and the clerks that you encounter, your doctors, the dentist. Everything is a relationship. The relationships seem never to end and seem to have the greatest promise and also at the same time the greatest range of concern in today's world. Everyone's thinking about, talking about, focusing on the relationships. Whether it's our relationships with those nearest and dearest to us, or relationships in a Baba group, or between groups that espouse Baba's teachings, or between Baba followers and followers of another path, relationships always come to play. It comes down to relationships. So, with that in mind, I began to think about what relationships have to seeing Baba as he really is. It occurred to me that some of the things that the avatar has said in past advents, as well as what Baba has said in this advent, really focus on relationships in a way that cuts right to the heart of the matter. Krishna said to Arjuna, "He who sees his Lord within every creature, deathlessly dwelling amidst the mortal, that man sees truly." Thus, ever aware of the omnipresent, always about him, he offers no outrage to his own Atman, or soul, hides the face of God beneath ego no longer. When Jesus was asked by the Pharisees, what's the highest law of the scriptures? What's the greatest law there is? It had to do with relationships. He said, the highest law is to love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy strength, and with all thy soul. And the second law, equal in importance to the first, is to love thy neighbor as thyself. As you treat the least of all men, so you treat me. And Baba, in his universal message, the statement, how to love God, also dwells on relationships. And over and over and over again, enough so that we could all exhaust the evening with quotes and still not exhaust the quotes of Baba's forcing our attention on relationships. A couple of very well-known examples. Baba says, to love God in the most practical way is to love our fellow beings. If we feel for others in the same way as we feel for our dear ones, we love God. If instead of seeing faults in others, we look within ourselves, we are loving God. If instead of robbing others to help ourselves, we rob ourselves to help others, we are loving God. And finally, Bala says, real happiness lies in making others happy. All of this is so old that I wonder if there's a way to make it new. Bala has said it advent after advent. Others, others, treat others, the golden rule. Sacrifice your own happiness for the happiness of others. What really makes it come to life? One of the things that began to stir my thoughts with making the link of striving to see Baba as he really is to the idea of relationships was hearing that once he said, I will reveal to you the greatest of spiritual secrets. Naturally, that caught my attention. Nobody can resist a secret, least of all a spiritual secret. And that secret was disarmingly simple. Never hurt the feelings of anyone. Bala said, because I am there, residing in the heart of each and all. It seems to me that the jump that Bala is forcing us to make is to realize that relationships are really one relationship, a relationship with him. And that all the pain and problems and joy and happiness that come from relationships, all the everything that we experience in dealing with the nearest and the farthest in our daily lives is really a dealing with him. And as we begin to see relationships as an opportunity to deal with him, to be with him, we began to get in on that secret that he was revealing. All these statements we've heard so many times, but what are their implications? I think another real advantage that we have, many of us here have been to India and have had the chance to talk with and learn from some of the closest disciples of Baba's, people who lived with him daily for years and years. And some of the close ones who don't live in India have also shared their experiences with us. We begin to get a sense of what Baba's training has done with them. I've summarized a few things. There are many more that I haven't touched on, but for one thing, in talking to the closest disciples, the Mandali of Bala, it's clear that being with him has made them make him their constant companion. Literally, Bala has become their constant companion. And literally, the training that Bala has given them has put his happiness before theirs, at the cost of their own happiness. When you hear some of the disciples tell the stories of being with Bala, some of them are hilariously funny, but you can't quite understand why. Sometimes stories are funny because they're so illogical. Bala, for example, will make somebody be wrong without really being wrong. He'll time and again insist on somebody repeating a phrase or coming at a certain time and then coming earlier and earlier. And then when they finally question it, Baba will say, you're questioning me? Is that the way to serve? And he forces circumstances in which the ego has to crumble. those stories have such potency because you know that on our own we'd never do it ourselves. Baba's training develops a willingness to accept the being wrong even though it seems illogical. To accept things that don't seem to make sense. And continuing to put Baba's happiness before one's own. It seems to me that we're in the midst of a terrible transition. A transition which comes from the beginning of the beginning, in which we've put ourselves first forever, for endless incarnations in every form, our self came first. And through however many millions of human incarnations, we continued that policy, which served us well. And coming into contact with the avatar, the self has to begin to take a back seat. And that's the exact point of Baba's training. It's what he makes us do. He's shown us in many ways, in his own example, he described the musts, those who are absorbed in God and know nothing but an experience of God, as his true lovers. And he has shown how even his own happiness, the happiness of the God-man, the Lord of the universe, is sacrificed for his lovers, his true lovers. He would go anywhere, on foot, by bullock cart, through monsoon, to be with for a moment one of his true lovers. And if his true lover wanted to be washed, or wanted a cup of tea, or wanted a special fruit, or wouldn't tolerate someone else around, or wanted to sit or lie down, his true lover wanted that. That's what Baba did. Baba has also shown such a pattern with his lovers of the world, doing all sorts of things, sacrificing his pleasure so that his lovers could have the pleasure of his presence. The Mandali reflect that example, and they're the closest thing perhaps to our grasping what it's like to have that true example of selflessness that Baba represented and lived out. But they see everything in terms of Baba. They don't understand events differently from happening in terms of Baba, because they've been backstage and they've seen him changing, wearing the apparel of each and every role. So they know that it's him who's angry, it's him who fails to complete a task, it's him who writes a bitterly complaining letter, it's him who's ecstatic at a talk the Mandali give, or disappointed that they don't have time to be with them. They know, they've learned over the years, that it's Baba in everyone, in everything. But it takes that kind of training, living with him, to begin to really, really experience those statements that sound so good and make them a part of our lives, the golden rule, putting others' happiness ahead of one's own. It takes the Nasik ashram experience, living at Maribod in close quarters, having people who really were quite individualistic, who had lives of their own, having to live without comfort, without luxury, without personal privacy. Why? Because they wanted to be near Baba, and the closer they came to the point of the funnel, the closer they came to each other, and that rubbing raised friction, which they put up with because of their love for Baba. It's interesting to me that loving Baba gets translated from something impersonal to something very personal. And wonder if it's really possible that the secret that the avatar brings is so simple that really it is him in each and every one of us. Really, that not in some special way or partial way or mysterious and distant way, some theoretical way, but in a real sense, it's him in each and every one of us. So that as we treat each, so we treat him. Those are powerful words. If we begin to take our relationships into account on those terms, they can be either extraordinarily frightening or amazingly exciting. It means every relationship isn't a relationship with anyone and everyone. It's a relationship only with him. They seem to be the channel to the beloved that everyone overlooks, looking for something more exotic, more esoteric. It can't be that the divine beloved really resides in someone so homely and so familiar as my husband or wife, my mother and father, the sales clerk, the newspaper boy. This can't be. It's got to be something more. Yet everything the avatar tells us begins to drive that point home, waiting for someone to accept it, waiting like St. Francis for the time when finally seeing the leper, instead of running in horror, he went over and embraced and kissed him. Finally it dawned, and I think the avatar extends that invitation to us with such an open secret that there's no danger of there being a rush. It's too difficult even to grasp when you care about it, much less when you don't. Relationships are so important because they give us the best opportunity to sacrifice our happiness. Something which seems quite odd in this civilization, in this world in which happiness is at the forefront of every quest. But it's as if the only way we can find ourselves as we really are is by destroying our happiness. The way Baba works, the way he talks about pulverizing the ego so that one can find the real self, makes you think that you have to lose everything to find everything. As if, I'm reminded of those times where you see in old Russian movies or something of the sort, where finally people get to such an extremity that they are forced to break up their furniture and their most treasured possessions, to burn it, to keep warm. It's as if they finally live, they live their lives to earn and gather these possessions. And the result is that really to live, to stay warm enough to live, they have to break it all up and burn it. It's as if we take a boat to a destination, but between us and the destination, after seas upon seas of travel, we come to a swamp and we can't cross it with the boat, and we can't cross it on foot. Quicksand, swamp creatures, and the destination just beyond. And the only solution is to break up the boat and put the pieces before us and walk on the pieces, this destroying the boat to get across the swamp, to get to the destination. It's almost as if we break our happiness and use it as stepping stones. And that's the only way we can take a step forward. The Bible tells us, of course, that the last stepping stone is ourself. But that's really going too far. I'm sure when we're ready, we'll get the picture. But I suppose ever since I once asked one of the mandali, one of those most close to Baba, she and her husband, when it was that she and her husband began really to feel the happiness and joy of being one of those rare couples to live their lives in Baba's proximity, when were you beginning to really know each other and be happy together? And she scrunched up her face and said, happiness? Baba slices our happiness to make room for the happiness he wants for us. The peculiar thing about relationships is that they force a lover of the God-man to come to terms with his directives, to put others' happiness before one's own, to accept illogical things, to take the blame when you don't feel you ought to be angry with oneself instead of another. Relationships are the avenue for getting close to Baba. They're the continuing school that he's given us. If we take seriously that that's what he means, that that's really him, and that the way to him is to begin to sacrifice what we want, painful as it is in this terrible transition. One time, seeing the sort of reviewing the panorama of people and relationships, another of the mandali commented, they don't know the sweetness of self-sacrifice. And I was taken so strongly aback by those words. They're so simple and so profound, and it was so clear that nobody teaches us the sweetness of self-sacrifice. Nobody imagines that self-sacrifice can be sweet. It sounds bitter, feels bitter. Only one can make it sweet. Only one event on earth can turn it around, change the policy of putting us first. And that's his coming on earth as man and encouraging us to put others' happiness before our own because it pleases him. His love is so great, and we therefore want to get so close to him, that it makes us do what we would never do otherwise. Begin to do what seems impossible. How hard is it? The mandali, under Baba's direct supervision, describes how impossibly difficult it is when Baba would tell them, by the way, would you take care of so-and-so for me? And so-and-so would be some arrogant pseudo-guru that had come to visit Baba and had all sorts of high-flown ideas about who he was and what he needed for his comforts. And Baba would assign one of his mandali to take care of such a character for days, weeks, months on end. And they would get totally fed up, totally up to their ears with it, come to Baba and say, I didn't come here to serve him, I came to serve you. And Baba would remind them, you don't think that you're serving me by carrying out my instructions? But you think you're serving him? Who asked you to serve him? Obviously, this terrible transition requires more than we can bring to bear. Obviously, the only way out is with the love that he brings that inspires those steps. But I wonder if we can begin to get ready for the time when he comes again and we might have a chance to serve him. Do we want to serve him for a minute and then leave because his ways don't suit us? Do we want to live in his presence for an hour and then find it illogical that he blamed us for the lights going out, for the food being cold, and so we leave? Do we want to serve him for a week and then find that because he's worn us out doing things that he's set us to, that we really don't see a future in that? Is it possible to begin the training today, in this life, with our relationships, so that what we see is not a battle between ourselves and each and everyone else that we deal with, but a chance to learn sweetness, maybe just learn taste of the sweetness of self-sacrifice. It seems to me that that's the message that the avatar brings. A secret so great that it can hardly be spoken and made any sense. Certainly by anyone except him. But it was in that idea that the subject of relationships had meaning to me. The idea that really there are no relationships at all, only a relationship with him. And that with that idea, that terrible transition would be made quicker and smoother. Only his love can lead us to that ultimate relationship, to be his alone, with him, forever, absorbed in him, drowned in his love. But Krishna, the very one who said, men look for me everywhere, but I am most easily found where I am most often missed, here in the form incarnate of human beings. Krishna said, give me your whole heart. Love and adore me. Worship me always. Bow to me only, and you shall find me. This is my promise, to love you dearly.
That's it?
Yeah. So maybe that was your request. Thank you for the request. So we
also had the share of hearing what it is. So that's the theme of relationship. Not of relationships, but it stems from relationships to relationship. In the very act of our destroying happiness, our own happiness, we eventually become the heirs to infinite bliss. This is beyond happiness. That's what it all means.
Did you find that true, Eric? What are you saying?
Huh?
Do you find that true?
It makes great sense to me. It is so true.
Sometimes I find that I try too hard.
Yeah.
I react, you know.
That's the nature of the self.
That's the nature of the self?
Yeah, it is. It is to protest. Yeah. But then gradually, it doesn't happen overnight unless His grace is there. That can happen not in overnight but in an instant. Otherwise we have to struggle. Self, the trait of the self is that to assert itself, you know, put itself first before anybody else. It's so true. It is so.
I feel though, actually, if I'm sacrificing, then I'm in trouble. But if I feel Baba, I do whatever I do to think of. Baba wants that, or Baba's happy with it. There's something kind of feeling of Baba in you. It's not destroying my happiness.
That is complacency.
Complacency?
Yeah.
But I feel Baba's happy with it.
Yeah, then if you feel it. Yeah, it is right. That's good. But there are steps beyond that too.
You know, I think a difficulty that many people have is that it seems that, or, you know, one, I should not assert myself, that I should sacrifice myself. But it also seems that when one does that, you are often taken advantage of, and also that even opportunities are missed. No.
But the thing is that we do not. Who says that you shouldn't assert yourself?
Well?
Assert yourself in such a way that while you are asserting yourself, let the other person not feel hurt about it. Mm. Assert yourself in such a way that it helps somebody else, not crushes somebody else. It uplifts somebody's spirit through your assertion. Mm. That assertion is absolutely essential. And that assertion stems from humbleness, from being absolutely true to yourself, that you are not and He alone is. Mm-hmm.
Mm. That makes sense. What about a case like this, this sort of situation?
Yeah.
Let's take a concrete example. We're in a room with Baba, but supposing that most of us are here for the first time, and I might sort of say, well, I'm going to sacrifice, I'm going to stay way in the back of the room and never come near to Baba. And yet, it seems that when one wants to be with Baba, wants to be close to Him, He is pleased by that. There's another case of a dilemma.
Yeah. So He doesn't, first of all, that is not the meaning of self-sacrifice.
Okay.
Self-sacrifice is when I have been with Him for years together and the person has just come, so I would shift myself at the back of that person and allow him to be there. But that doesn't mean that you have come for the first time and you stay there. That is not right. That is not sacrificing yourself, but sacrificing Baba in you. Take the case. It's a very glaring example one day. You know, it's so common. It's nothing new in this. It is so common. One day it so happened on our mass tours, we were in Ajmer. It's winters are very severe there. The mast had come, and he had no clothes or anything of that sort. Baba had just bathed him, and he was... body was feeling the cold. So Baba immediately turned to me and says, is there any warm blanket or something like that? Get it. So immediately, of course, well, I started glowing because I had a very new blanket, you know. My parents had given me. I had just come to Him at that time. You see, 1939. So I went and immediately brought to Him, here is it. And I felt happy about it, that at least the blanket is being made use of by Baba for the mass. These are the effervescence that takes place with it. And Baba says, whose is that? Whose blanket is that? So I very meekly said, Baba, it's mine. Yours? Why did you bring yours? Go and put it by there. Ask somebody else who has some spare blankets to give. You follow what it means?
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like that. It's a very tricky thing. In spite of my putting myself at the back of the self of the masks, convenience, while doing that, I put myself first.
Yeah,
and him behind me. You follow?
Yeah,
by
yeah.
having this, by offering that. It's very tricky.
Yeah.
No use arguing or analyzing these things. Each act, each step, if you analyze it, and you feel that you're stumped.
Yeah.
You feel that you're...
So leave it to him, brother.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Live the most normal life. Be natural.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, be like a child. Be childlike. That's what he says. That's mm-hmm. the simplest thing. Once you have found me, hold on to me. Rely totally upon me. Do your best and leave the rest to me. Leave all this analysis and philosophy and everything to these people, you see, the philosophers and theologians. Which is better? Simple thing is that. Try to love me if you can't. If you can't love me, remember me. If you can't remember me all the time, at least remember me 7 times a day. If you can't remember 7 times, at least twice a day, once before you go to bed and once just after you have awakened in the morning. It's like that. You have to begin, you see, yeah. And naturally, it's not a period like that. Then naturally, the evolution takes place of loving that. Everything has its own evolution. And it gradually goes on and on and on. Mm. But these are the things that all these impressions have to be there. All these impressions need to be there. Yeah, you see. You're going to prepare something, you're going to build some structure, you see. You're going to build an edifice for him where he is made to come one day and adorn the edifice. So you can't build it like that. You have to gather the material, have the foundation, then gather the material, you see, and so forth. So these are all the preliminaries towards that. But we think that, well, we have built the edifice now. He has to come and adorn it. We are so anxious about it, in our love for him, which we say our love. But that is our enthusiasm, not love. That enthusiasm has its ebbs and has its tides. Love has no ebbs and love no tides. Best is not to speak about anything. Yeah, I feel like that. Just remember him, not to speak about him. To speak about him, to speak of him, you get into deeper and deeper waters, and you have not even learned to swim. And having learned to swim, he says, then you must learn how to drown yourself. It's a contradiction, isn't it? Huh? Yeah. Unless and until we learn to swim, we don't have the daring to approach the ocean. And test our faculty of swimming. So when we have the surety that we can swim, then we go into deeper waters. And then he wants us now to learn how to drown yourself after having the firm conviction that you can swim in deeper oceans. Make anything out of it.
The ocean isn't too salty so that you always float.
Let it float. But he wants us to drown ourselves.
That seems to me to be utterly impossible.
But it's not drowning ourselves to kill yourself. That is another thing. Then he says, drown yourself. Unless you drown yourself and reach the bed there and be there, you won't be able to find the pearl that is there. And when you get the pearl, then you come alive. And you are. Whereas you are not even floating, but you are the ocean itself. So all these things are there, which is the truth. Not are the truth, but it is the truth. But in order to establish the truth, you cannot establish it through words, through thoughts, but you have to become it. You have to live. And then that truth is established in every individuality. But those who have been the truth, embodiment of truth, they have laid out these plans, you know, for our benefit. Not that we should, what do you call, feel or experience that we are already there after having gone through all the literature and all this, or that we are there. That's not the purpose of it. But the purpose of it is impress our mind with these. These are the impressions that will uproot all other impressions that we are made up of. This whole system is made up of impressions only. So the only way to uproot those impressions are these impressions. His words, the words proceeding from the source. Yeah. They are the only impressions capable of uprooting the our own impressions. Yeah. Because his words stem from him being impressionless. The impressions are there, but they are not. They don't affect him. They don't. They are not stemming from that which is impressioned. But they are the words of truth, free, totally free of impressions. So that these impressions, when they are impressed upon our mind, help us to root out our impressions. The very seat of impression is the mind. The roots of the mind eventually. But in order that the mind is uprooted or the impressions are uprooted, what needs is gradual course of grace. Barring His grace, I'm talking about.